On the Business of Family Business, we tell the stories of family businesses across the St. Louis region. It's presented by CMA Consulting, and the story today of the Saraceno brothers, John, Bart, Michael, and Chris. They all join us in studio today to talk about the family restaurant business that not only has expanded, that has continued to thrive year after year. We're also joined with Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. And if you have a family business story you would like to share on this program, reach out to Dan Bean. Their website is cmaconsult.com. Just send them an email. Well, who's the very first person in the business? Maybe I should ask that. Who's the very first person to start working for the family business?
Yes, both of us.
At the same time?
Just about. Bart and I were about the same time.
What year?
It was 1970.
Right at 70 when Dad first opened.
Right at 1970, yeah.
Well, if you go back to me, Lucino days, we would go with Grandpa and Dad.
Your dad started in 1970. What were your guys' role in 1970?
Oh, we started out as busboys, dishwashers.
Yeah. Was that out of necessity? Did your dad need you for that role?
I think so, and I think he liked having us around, and we liked being with him.
Mm-hmm. Did you want to work there, or did they force you, like you have to come and eat your help?
No, we were never forced to work there.
Yeah, because normally when a family business or a restaurant starts, there's a lot of necessity pieces where, hey, we just need you for this, and then eventually you grow, but you guys wanted to do it. How old were you guys?
Oh, it was before we started driving, I know that. I remember one time my dad sent a customer from that was drinking at the bar to pick me up from high school when I was a freshman, and he worked in construction in a little white Fairlane 500, and I had to sit on a sewer in the car. When he picked us up, we sat on the sewer, and he took us right to work right after school.
Was that a lot of, you'd work right after school?
Yeah. Yep.
Ever work before school? Did you have to do prep work or anything?
Not really. Saturday mornings. Saturday and Sunday mornings, but not during the school week.
Yeah. What was your dad's name?
Bart.
Bart. And why did he want to start a restaurant?
Because when he was sponsored to come to this country, he had two cousins that were in the restaurant business, Joe and Lou Perini. Mm-hmm. And when they burnt down, they had to go to work. And my dad tried to sell insurance, but he couldn't pass the insurance license because of the English. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't understand the English. So he went to my grandfather, my mother's father, and said, we got to do something.
Mm-hmm. And your dad came here from Italy?
Yes.
What year did he come here?
1954.
Okay, so there was a little bit of time in between. So what was he doing before he started the restaurant?
When he came to this country?
Yes. I mean, by the time he came to the United States, and there was probably, 54, 16-year gap, what was he doing for work?
He was working in that restaurant for the Perini brothers.
Oh, so he was working in the restaurant that time.
You mean in Italy? What did he do in Italy before he came here?
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, you mentioned the insurance, but I see how you're saying he was sponsored by the restaurant, so he came and worked that way. But what was he doing in Italy?
He was one of eight brothers, and they were in the farming industry.
In Italy?
In Italy.
Yeah.
And there was not enough, it was very tough work, and there was not enough money to be made to support the father and the eight boys.
Yeah.
So.
And out of necessity, he was trying to find some options.
He had to find something. And he had an aunt here, and her and her two boys sponsored my dad.
Mm-hmm.
So he came. And they were in the restaurant business, and he started washing dishes and busboy and whatever, and graduated to pizza maker.
Was your dad married when he came here, or did he find love here in St. Louis?
He found love here. He married the gentleman he was making pizzas with, side by side. Mm-hmm. He married his daughter. There was a hat check girl there.
There it was.
He fell in love.
Yeah. Now there's four of you here, and each of you have your own experiences. Each of you are in the restaurant business. So how did you guys find that this is what you want to do with your life, just like your father did?
It's all we knew. We didn't go to school, and we loved it, and just kind of grew and took a...
Michael, you have a similar experience?
Yeah, a similar experience. I guess we just saw, our mother and father worked together at the restaurants, and we saw how well they worked together. Mm-hmm. We saw their work ethic. We saw their love of hospitality and people and the food business, and just it just was what was instilled with us at home, and that in turn related to the restaurants as well. So it was, I don't know, I guess it was somewhat natural.
Yeah.
Then more than anything.
Chris, did your mom speak Italian?
No, my mom did not speak Italian, but she understood everything.
Yeah.
She was born and raised in a full-blooded Italian household. But in going back to when Bart talked about my dad working with his future father-in-law, but it wasn't at the time, but it became his future father-in-law. My dad bussed tables or whatever he did, the language barrier really, you know, hurt him being mm-hmm. able to advance in doing more. And so my mom, you know, took a liking to him and started teaching him English. And English was just important mm-hmm. for him to learn. So she felt it was very important for him to advance to keep learning the language. Thus, we did not learn the Italian language because we were supporting them as, you know, mm-hmm. we grew up, you know, speaking English all the time in the house. Now,
you learn the swear words at least.
Well, you know, yeah, but and you know the Italian food words and different things. It's not that we could not we're completely out of the Italian language, but we, you know, we're not fluent in the language. Which now we all wish we would have, you know. But at the time, you didn't know anybody, and you're doing or any better, and you're just trying to do what you have to do to get by and keep, you know, keep the mm-hmm. working and keep the dream alive that they wanted us to have. So
yeah, where's the original location?
The original place was Lacino's. It was at 3506 Hampton Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
We opened there in 61. My grandfather died in 69, and my grandmother didn't want to go back into the restaurant. There was so much love between them, she couldn't handle going back in.
Mm.
So at the time of his death, then Mama Perini's came up for sale, and which is where the original Bartolino's was mm-hmm. on Hampton and Columbia. We opened there in October of 69.
So what are the four locations? How do they differ? How does each brother manage? And what's the structure like when you have four brothers equal into business, but they have different parts that they oversee? We're going to continue our talk with Bartolino's and the Saraceno brothers joining us on The Business of Family Business. Welcome back to The Business of Family Business. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. Four brothers in studio with us today, Bart, Chris, Michael, and John Saraceno. They're with Bartolino's, and of course, four great locations branded differently across the St. Louis region. We're going to learn more about them. That's what this program's all about, learning about family businesses across the St. Louis region. It's The Business of Family Business, presented by CMA Consulting. Now, there's actually four locations, and each of you have basically a different location you oversee. Is that how the structure works out?
Yeah, we're all 25% owners.
Right.
And, you know, Michael's in South County. Mm-hmm. I'm on Hampton.
Mm-hmm.
Chris and John are between the two Chris's, the one on Watson and the one on 100 and Art Tucker.
Yeah,
Chris is at the Docket.
Right across the street from us here at KMOX. I know. I've walked over and had many of meals over there. Very nice.
Well, we thank you for that.
Yeah. So this is kind of a unique way that you guys structure the business. Sometimes when you hear the family businesses, each of them either they manage and they own the one restaurant, as opposed to the structure you guys have, which is you're all 25% equal owners, but you each have your own independence and the different restaurants that are there. Is this intentional? Did you set it up this way, or was this something that maybe came from a different decision?
Go ahead.
I think it works best.
Yeah.
I mean, because, you know, I think as Dan said, we all grew up at the same dinner table. We all were treated and brought up the same way,
mm-hmm.
and in a very good, humble, hardworking way.
Yeah.
But as anything else, you develop your own personalities, your own styles, your own ways of doing things. But it's ended up to be I don't think we could say, yeah, we structured it, we planned it, but how it has fallen into place, it works, and it works well for us all.
Yeah.
And we're very, I mean, because I think we all have our similar beliefs and our mm-hmm. similar styles of wanting to make sure our guests are treated with the utmost hospitality mm-hmm. and good food and good service. But we're all individuals, and we all... And as we get older, we all have our lifestyles, so it works, and it works well, and it's you know, we're on the phone or texting 24/7. So it nowadays with the way, you know, you can communicate it, it works.
You know, I guess it just sort of evolved that way, you know, during the, through the whole transition or over the years. I think, you know, we all worked together at one time. John and I worked together in Bartolino's South and South County for quite a few years. I mean, we opened that in 1981. Bart and Chris worked together at the two Bartolinos, and then when we opened Chris's, Chris went to Chris's, and then for a while I worked at the Bartolino's Osteria, and when we moved the location from Hampton and Columbia to the Hampton and 44 in the Drury Inn. So it things just sort of evolved over the years, and it has always, you know, everything works out for a reason. Everything is you know, we were brought up to share and share alike, and that's what we've done, and that's what we'll continue to do.
You don't step on each other's toes that way. It seems like you each have your own independence to do the things that you need to for each individual restaurant. You get to make your own decisions, and that probably helps ease some of the tensions too, as opposed to maybe working with each other directly, constantly, all the time.
Well, that's partially true, but you know, we meet all the time and we discuss, and hey, this is good for the whole company, or and then we'll vote on things, and if you lose, you lose. We don't go away mad, you know. Then just try to revolve all in the same, you know, we're all striving for the same goal.
Yeah. Let me ask this to Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. So the way that they structure this, there's four independent, but, you know, separate, but not necessarily independent. They all work together, and they all have a stake in each other's restaurants. What do you think about the way that's structured?
So that works very well for them right now. It's very obvious that these four siblings work very well together. They respect each other. They love each other, and they will work it out. However, when it comes to continuing the family business on to the next generation and passing these four entities to the next generation, that's one way to do it. Mm-hmm. Another way to do it is to create a holding company or a parent company that owns the four stores. The four brothers would own the parent company, 25% each, and then they pass the parent company and all the stores go with it. So sometimes that can be slightly easier to pass across the generations when there's a holding company involved. But for what they've done and where they are, this is the way a lot of multi-unit family businesses operate, whether it's restaurants or C-stores or storage facilities, apartment buildings. This is very common. It may change when they get further into the life cycle. And again, it may not.
Yeah. And part of my experience going to Chris's at the Docket is you see the law students, and you'll see that sort of thing because there's a, you know, a large population of people that are living in there. But, you know, that's this part of what you see. And do each of your restaurants try to cater to a different type of customer, or is there a typical customer you guys are trying to appeal to?
Everyone that walks through the front door.
Yeah.
They're very important.
Of course, yeah.
You know, we have young, old, we have rich, poor. It's all, everybody's equal important to us.
Ryan, I think what we all learned from our parents, is, which was very much, was that they respected everybody from the early generations from 1961 on until they all, you know, left this earth. You know, I was just thinking when they work 6 days a week, but on Sundays, there wasn't a Sunday that it wasn't just a family. There was always somebody from outside the family that was at our house that my mom and dad, you know, were hosting for a dinner or for, you know, a get together or whatever. And so I think we learned that part of the hospitality business. Doesn't matter where you come from, what your background from, when they walk in your door, you're to be treated like family, you know, to welcome that guest and everything with open arms. So that's what we learned.
So at Bartolino's, do you keep any of the family recipes intact from, you know, the 60s and 70s?
Yeah, I think pretty much for the most part, most of the recipes are intact, but you can't just live on your laurels and that, and you have to continue to better things, to bring new things to the table, to evolve, to, you know, there's just, the consumer is much different today than they were back in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. There's just more of an educated consumer today. And, you know, there's a lot more foodies around, you know. Mm. I don't consider us a foodie type restaurant. I think we are traditional Italian, but you still need to offer other things. And that's how you do it with specials and maybe wine events, wine tasting dinners, you know, things like that.
So I'm an eater. You'd appeal to someone like me.
Correct. Yes.
I enjoy something like that. The restaurant industry has changed greatly since the 1960s when they saw their father get into the business itself. They've expanded since then. They've learned how to adapt. What are some of those lessons they've learned from all of those changes? We're going to find that out next with Bart, Chris, Michael, and John, the Saraceno brothers, joining us in studio on The Business of Family Business, presented by CMA Consulting. Telling the story of family businesses across the region. I'm your host, Ryan Recker, along with Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. If you have a family business story to tell on this program, we would love to hear it. Reach out to Dan Bean, the website cmaconsult.com. Just drop him an email and let him know you're interested. In studio is Bart, Chris, Michael, and John from Bartolino's. It's the Saraceno brothers telling their story. So you mentioned the different changes. So how has the industry changed from, you know, the 70s and 80s to where it is today?
It's changed tremendous. I mean, if you go into the early days, I mean, the Italian food was basically mustacioli and veal parmesan and very simple.
Mm-hmm.
And now, as Michael said, people are very educated today. They know food and you have to keep up with it ourselves and keep things moving.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, as things have evolved, as you know, the labor situation, that's always an issue. I think back in the day when most restaurants had white tablecloths and so people expected, you know, fine dining and a tablecloth and cloth napkins and that sort of thing, maybe even, you know, tableside service to an extent. We never did that. We never were a Tony's or a Al's or an Al Baker's or a Kimo's or something like that, where we did tableside cooking. But still, you know, we had tablecloths and that. And I think that the biggest, I think that was back in during the recession in 2006 or 2007, we, you know, we were trying to look at ways to cut costs. You know, that's never, you know, it's a constant. And you're just trying to, your profit margins shrink and you got to find a way to cut something somewhere without compromising quality. So that's one way we did it. But
yes, that's correct. We never give up on the quality. We eliminated tablecloths and kind of more of a, not that we're ever stuffy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to use the term stuffy restaurant.
Yeah.
Well, I think you wanted someone to be there to come and celebrate a birthday and anniversary, but you also just want to come to dinner and just have a meal for the evening. Not just nothing fancy. So you just have to maybe cater to all the sorts.
John, do you remember your dad's favorite dish?
Oh,
he ate anything. I
mean, yeah,
he really wasn't much in the kitchen, but he knew good food. He knew,
as our mom would say, he never missed a meal. But he was a little guy, you know.
Yeah.
He wasn't. And yet, and just to throw something back in, that in the early days of the restaurant business, there weren't that many restaurants as there are today.
Mm-hmm.
And people normally dressed up on a Saturday night.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Sport coat, tie.
You see that at hockey games, too.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Back when you see the old footage, people
wore
suits to go to a Blues game or something like that.
Right. Now people come in and they're comfortable, you mm-hmm. know, just a different different times.
Yeah.
I think the people's eating habits are just all over the board. So, and I mean, if you can be everything for everybody, it's great, but it's hard to do that. And,
but
going back to even, you know, everything from the way the customer dressed, or even we would have the same customer every Friday night, every Saturday night.
Yeah.
With it was, you know, his wife and the husband and wife, and, you know, it was two Manhattans and a strip steak and a pasta on the side. I mean, it was automatic. And I guarantee you could set your watch to mm-hmm. them, and they were going to come in at 8 o'clock and they were going to sit down at 8:15, and they were so, but now with obviously the involvement of more restaurants and the different ethnic restaurants that are out there and people that are just educated more with food, you know, you want to just be able to offer that experience that you know, whether it's better service or more attentive service or as owners being there and making sure that they're greeted and felt welcome, that, you know, you're doing everything to have the edge, you know, to make sure that those guests and those people that are in your restaurant feel appreciated.
So have the trends of when people like to go out and eat changed as well? You see more people just purposely waiting until the weekend as opposed to maybe they were going out several times a week?
I think people go out more now during the week than the weekends. I mean, really, you used to wait, guarantee waiting line on Friday and Saturday night, right? Mm-hmm. You know, hour and a half wait, mm-hmm. you know, but people didn't mind. It was just a casual evening. Now people are, you know, a lot of times they're trying to do three things in that evening. They're going to go to dinner. They're going to go to a movie. They're going to a show, you know, mm-hmm. an event or something.
And just to add a little bit something to what Chris said about the different people eating habits were, you know, we used to get a late crowd mm-hmm. in the 70s and we never got out of the restaurant till 2:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm. We remember the Lucino's. We were open. We had the bar rush. We're open at 2 o'clock and
correct.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even at Chris's Pancakes, I mean, we were open till 3 o'clock in the morning, and you guaranteed at 1:30 we were going to be full.
Wow.
And I mean, it was everything from breakfast to a T-bone steak being sold, you know, but people just, you know, people went out and now, you know, for a lot of good reasons, you know, with the change of the, you know, drinking habits or even with the not drinking and driving and those types of things, and people
healthier eating
and healthier lifestyles have definitely
Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, I wanted to talk to you about that because there is a economic factor that family businesses will look into, you know, maybe the size of their facility, maybe the hours that they're open. There's a lot of little things that change with the times that they have to take into consideration.
Absolutely. And every business that has peak and off-peak hours struggles with how big a facility, how many staff members, what's our capacity. And no business can afford to build for the peak or staff for the peak, because in the off peak, you're going to kill yourself economically if you do that. That's why at rush hour, we have rush hour. Mm-hmm. We can't afford to build roads to accommodate all the people that want to drive at the same time at 7:30 in the morning and 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So restaurants are the same way on Friday and Saturday. You can never build them big enough for Friday and Saturday, because the rest of the week will pull you under if you do.
You know, when there's a discussion in the city about raising minimum wage, and we just had one, so over the next couple of years, they'll be raising it a little bit each year up until, I think, 5 years from now. So how does that impact the restaurant industry?
Well, I think, to be honest with you, most of our people aren't being paid minimum wage, you know, and due to the tight labor market in today's, you know, economic times, most, if not all, are being paid more than minimum wage. The only time where I think it is an issue, or we've, you know, like in our restaurants, most of the servers are making most of their money from tips. And so if they get into a wage of, say, $10, $12 an hour, you know, it's really, that's a high wage to be paying a tipped employee. And so that, I think we have an issue with that. It's like, but it's not to pay a dishwasher, to pay a cook, which you can't really pay a cook today, a good cook, $12 an hour. So it just doesn't happen in today's market. So the bottom line is it will increase prices, and the end user, the consumer, is the one who's going to be paying for it.
Yeah.
And we all are. We're all consumers. We all go to restaurants, and so we all will be paying a higher price.
What happens in a situation where you all grew up in the restaurant business? Did any of you work outside of the family business, or have you always worked for the family business?
None of us has ever had an outside job.
Really?
Not one of us has worked for someone else, and at our age now, I think it'd be impossible. You know, we've all been our own boss, and we've been very fortunate. We've been blessed, and I think, you know, we all started it early on, 12 years old, and I think Chris was the only one who got by with it until he wasn't working, until he was in his early 20s, I think. But.
Not a bad thing.
So he was the baby.
So how do you guys get along? I've heard stories of family businesses where they work together and eventually there's a boiling over point and you're, that's it, I'm out of here, or whatever. And you, have you ever had those moments as a family business, or have you found a way to work in harmony?
Again, I think we've all been pretty blessed. We all get along. I mean, my mom was an only child. My dad was the only one to come to this country from eight brothers. So this is all we have, and we have each other and our love and trust. And
yeah. That means a lot.
Don't get me wrong. When we have meetings, sometimes, but we never leave mad.
Yeah.
Not to say that we've, you know, we have had plenty of arguments and discussions, and, you know, but at the end of the day, you still have the same respect, and you, we all respect each other's opinions, and some might be, have a better opinion than others, but we won't go there, but and it's true, and so what you see is what you get, and we do get along and work together day in and day out. We're talking to each other on a daily basis. We get together on holidays with their whole families. All of each one of us have children and their spouses and their our grandchildren and their, you know, so it's, I think there's 45 or 46.
Wow.
When we all get together, just immediate family. So it's quite the spectacle.
Yeah, it's not bad for one person coming here from Italy in the 50s.
No,
it's pretty amazing how fast the family has grown. Well, it probably means you have a lot of trust in each other's abilities too, the way you work together.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. We all have our strengths and weaknesses. And I think after all these years, we've realized that, and you know, we will defer to the other brother who we think may have more expertise there and more knowledge, or and that's how we get along.
Yeah. Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. So there's four brothers here today. None of them have worked outside of the family restaurant business. Is that rare?
That's pretty rare.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes we will see a member of the next generation that only worked for the family business, but to have all four members of the next generation always work for the family business, particularly from age 12, although it sounds like Chris got in a little bit later on the phone. That's fairly unusual. But what is also equally amazing is how well they get along and how well they've worked together for decades, and they have made it work together. Mm-hmm. So they obviously have done an excellent job here.
We'll continue one last time with Bart, Chris, Michael, and John from Bartolino's. You may have enjoyed one of their restaurants. There's four locations for you to choose from, and each offering something special. The Saraceno brothers will continue our conversation with them, along with Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, next on The Business of Family Business, presented by CMA Consulting. If you enjoy this story, you can check it out online, KMOX.com. In the podcast section, you'll be able to listen back to this interview we have with Bart, Chris, Michael, and John Saraceno, the brothers talking about the restaurant business itself and the one restaurant that was started by their father back in the 1960s with Bartolino's. Let's talk about Bartolino's, and I want to go through each location. And Bart, what's that location? What separates that from the other location?
Just the location.
Yeah.
So our menus are correct.
Yeah.
Sauces, everything.
What's the experience like when you walk in there?
On Hampton?
Yes.
I think it's very welcoming.
It's a larger venue.
It's a larger venue. We have a larger bar patio than South County. We have two separate banquet rooms inside the restaurant. We have five inside the hotel. So that is probably one of the biggest differences. Although on Lindbergh, we just changed the bar up and changed the banquet room, and they can hold about 100 people back there. And,
yes.
And in one of our rooms, we can hold 200. So
wow. It's a lot of space.
It's a lot of space.
Yeah.
I think to help Bart, it's a different feel in a sense that the restaurant is inside of a hotel. So, I mean, there is an exterior entrance to it. I think a lot of people who come and stay at the Drury Inn may think that if they don't know the name Bartolino's, then, you know, unless you're from St. Louis, then, you know, you recognize the name. But a lot of people may, if they're staying at the hotel, they think that the restaurant is owned by the hotel, but it's not. But so there is a little different feel there, but it's definitely the same food, the same welcoming service, like he said.
Warm, warm, friendly atmosphere.
Right, so there's a little bit of difference.
So you don't have, like Bartolino South, for example, that doesn't have as big of banquet rooms. And but so tell me what it's, really, if the menu's the same and you look at the experience and the food, so really your clientele, you get a lot of families and things coming in, or what would you normally see?
I guess, you know, one of the big things, we have a, our customer base is in South County, you know, that's where most of our customers come from. I'm not saying that we don't get from other areas, you know, and in the Bartolino's Osteria at Hampton and 44, I think they draw more, but it's more of a destination, you know, where they're getting people with wanting to go to the hill. And so we're not really on the hill. We're on the outskirts of the hill.
A street.
And so, you know, we're fortunate in South County that we've, you know, we've been there since 1981. So we've got 38 years there now. And established a huge client base, and we've been very blessed there. We're very fortunate. That's where our support comes from.
So Chris's Pancake House, what's the idea when you open up another location? It's a little bit different than the rest of them.
Well, the breakfast side came from my dad. He always, and mom, they used to go to IHOP over on Chippewa and Watson after Mass every Sunday. Mm-hmm. And my dad also would play cards with Bill Ernst, who was your Uncle Bill's restaurant, so Pancake House. So I think he saw a need in at Chris's Pancake on 5980 Southwest. It's a very, since the day we opened in 87, November of 87, we are so the community between the Hill, Southwest Gardens, Clifton Heights, St. Louis Hills, mm-hmm. Lindenwood neighborhood, Southampton neighborhood, we've been welcomed by our clientele is so heavily from those neighborhoods. We're just a neighborhood. I think Applebee's was a neighborhood, like they opened as a neighborhood bar and grill. We opened as a neighborhood kind of. I mean, I think we're, you know, that perfect mix for a good family, wholesome breakfast or lunch or even dinner that is affordable to everyone.
Breakfast is my go-to meal. Mm-hmm. You do breakfast
can't
all the time.
Can't beat bacon, can you?
Oh, I always almost order the exact same thing anywhere I go. And I got to admit, when I go across the street to Chris's on the docket there, I always ask for bacon crispy. You guys know how to cook it right. And I don't know how many places I go to and I'll say bacon crispy, and they don't quite get it. You guys know what you're doing.
Good.
And what's the story with your bread? You got different bread than anywhere I've ever been.
The focaccia bread?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is that's Chef Tim Jansen's secret recipe that he brought in to us, and it's been a popular. I mean, we sell loaves of it. You know, it's really a great it's a great little recipe.
Yeah. So Chris is at the docket. Was that the last location to open up?
Yeah, we opened in 2016 now, mm-hmm. November of 2016. Mm-hmm. So great opportunity there. My son was going to law school there, and when the docket had closed down, and then the Airmark Services was running it just as a grab and go, the school was looking for something a little bit more for the students and for the area around it, whether it be the courtrooms or the courthouse or the or the city hall. So we talked to SLU, and they liked our concept and our idea. And as they say, you know, we were able to partner up with them and got a nice deal. You know, at the time when a lot of businesses were leaving downtown, it was a good time for us to come in. So I don't think that our concept is there's a lot of that down here. You know, so it's been good, and we do well with the locals downtown. We do well with the jurors downtown. Yeah. We do well with the students. So
it probably helps Soldiers Memorial reopening, and then maybe even discussions about a soccer stadium. It will be down the road on Market. That probably could help too when you see more people coming to downtown that way.
Yeah, I mean, one of our biggest impacts in the last year was the SEC tournament that was here.
Huge.
And we saw what a what that can do for the whole city. Not just, I mean, you know, selfishly, yes, for us it is where we're positioned, but as a whole city, to see people dressed in their in their school colors and walking the streets of St. Louis, it's a great, refreshing feeling. And I think, I mean, soccer will do that
it
for
will.
Us as well as the Cardinals. The Cardinals do very well for us. The weekend, they draw so many people from, you know, when the Cubs are in town, when Milwaukee's in town, Pittsburgh, it draws those out of town folks to come that want to watch a weekend series, and it's fun, and it makes downtown such a great place.
Do any of you have any kids that are interested in following in your footsteps?
Yeah. So my youngest is 30. He's and so he's in the business.
He is.
Right.
Okay.
And then Bart's son is 28?
Seven.
Right.
He just turned 27.
Yeah, 27. Okay. He's in the business.
Interest there too. Chris and John, any kids?
I have a 20-year-old who's gotten involved here lately. Kind of like me, got on the wagon late, but he's he's been working at it. So, and Johnny has all girls, so.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Any interest with them?
No, the girls they're all married now, and
they have their own family.
They're stay-at-home moms right now.
Yeah. So when you're looking at the way the family is structured, just like your parents were in it, and now all four of you are in it, have you thought about what happens when maybe it's your time to retire? You're working that out now, yeah. That's a part of it, yeah.
Right.
The planning of it all, to figure out what happens next.
It would be our hope that, you know, somebody from our last name would carry on, you know, our family business. And our job, I think, would be to kind of have it as structured as much as possible that they're just not taking over a building or an entity. You know, they're taking over a family business.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I think that'd be a cool, a really neat thing to see us be able to hopefully retire to about 50 hours a week.
Retirement to 50 hours a week.
Well, you see, part-time work.
Bart, you see this in the next generation. You said there's always been a family motto when it comes to the restaurants. Do you see that same motto being upheld in the next generations of interest?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Our business model, and we're taught to us from our parents, cook good food and give plenty of it, you know, and basta, enough said, even say no more. It's
Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. I want to get your impressions of the family story you heard today.
So this is a good example of the American story, the American dream, where people come to this country and they become a great success. Some of the ancestors knew the restaurant business when they arrived, and some learned it after they got here. But the prior generations, as well as this one, has worked very hard. They've learned their clientele and what they want and don't want, and they've done a very good job of serving their clientele for decades. This generation also internalized the values and the philosophies of their parents, and they've worked together over many years, over decades, to create four successful restaurants. So all of this to me looks like a surefire recipe for success as they move it to the next generation.
Great. Bart, Chris, Michael, and John, thank you so much for coming in today, sharing your guys' story.
Thank you. It's been our honor.
Thank you for having us, Ryan.